Hello and welcome to the 465th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 298th episode of Video Game Roundtable recorded on April 25th. I am Jonah Falcon.
I am TJ Denzer.
And I am Scott Dirk.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry. Oh no, I'm sorry, it's not the 25th, it's the 24th that we're recording this. Oh well. Anyway, this is a special episode, and there's no editing, and there's nothing. There's no theme music. It's just us, because I am in L.A., and my laptop died. And by died, I mean the screen cracked.
Ooh. Oh, no.
It's one of those, you know, touchscreen laptops. So it was just completely... It's old. I seldom ever use it. So I can't do any proper editing on this. So this is all going to be unedited, folks. You're going to be listening to raw copy this week. But I'm so dedicated to getting us at least once a week that I'm going to publish this podcast as is. And it is one weird podcast in more ways than one. The content is weird, too. So, yeah. Anyways, DJ, what have you been playing?
So, I've still been on Persona 5, and I got over the problems because I have a different problem this week.
you know what? Spoilers.
No. You know what my favorite thing about any video game is, especially RPGs? It's when it gives you the illusion of choice, but really there's invisible walls everywhere in the form of dialogue and cutoff areas that force you to take a single path for long periods of time.
You know, JRPGs are like that, though. They're very linear. They want to tell you their story. It's the Western RPGs that generally give you all the choices, like the Mass Effects and the Red Dead Redemptions. Although Red Dead Redemption ends the same way no matter what.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not absolutely crazy against being told a good story. What I am against is when the story shows up when I'm within reach of like a save room, which is nearby. I can see it. I can actually see it. It's right in front of me. It's clearly there. And the story is like, well, you can't go over there yet because you need to go over here. I mean, it'll take me a second. Just let me save my game. Nope, you got to go this way, buddy. We have a story to tell, and we're gonna stay on track.
That's
no deviations. And it's a good story, but God, I hate it when I'm told to do stuff on a regular basis like that.
How about you, Scott? What have you been playing?
Well, speaking of weird, I've been playing Thimbleweed Park, and I've gotten quite well into it. It's basically a murder mystery, and you're trying to figure out who killed this guy, and there's also other things going on in town and with the each character that you're playing with, and you got to try to get them their little checklists off, And they do a lot of breaking the fourth wall and kind of, you know, when I was growing up with LucasArts and Sierra, I felt it was just more of the fans kind of competing against each other. But apparently, I guess the makers in LucasArts really were kind of actually competing against Sierra because they make a lot of jokes at Sierra. They flat out call out Sierra and say, yeah, don't you like... We're going to pick up this broken ketchup bottle, and if I was in the Sierra game, I would be dead right now. So,
you know they didn't really do all that many that hard fourth wall. You know, they would do a joke, like in Full Throttle, the reporter would say, Ben, I need you, you're my only hope, you know, making a Star Trek reference. But, you know, they never really actually spoke directly, you know, about other stuff. They never really broke the fourth wall that much. I mean, the worst I can remember is at the end of Full Throttle, Ben said, stop, you're going to kill us all. And Rip Berger whispered, shh, don't spoil the ending. You know? That's the only time I ever remember for a LucasArts really hitting the fourth wall that hard, you know.
Yeah,
isn't LucasArts. It's basically a fan made thing, really. I mean, or at least fan, you know, a lot of fan service.
Oh yeah, it does seem that way. They're kind of seeming to hone in on this point that adventure games shouldn't be about killing the player off all the time and just letting them explore and go do things without feeling like they're being punished for exploring. So, you know,
that's part of the fun of Sierra, though, the ways you could die. I mean, there's some really inventive ways. It's like Dragon's Lair. Or Jurassic Park, the Telltale game. You know, you want to see yourself crushed between a Stegosaurus and a T-Rex. You know?
Yeah, it is entertaining. And the game is fun, though. You know, it has a good story, and I'm enjoying it.
Is there a mansion involved, at least?
Yes, there is a mansion, in fact. It's a mansion, even. It's named
Here's
twice.
The thing, if it's going to be the third Maniac Mansion game, then there might as well be a mansion in there.
Yeah, or at least a Maniac. I think this is more like Maniac Mansion 3 without calling it Maniac Mansion 3, because the
Data technically calls itself Maniac Mansion 2, you know.
When there's a point, you actually see those characters make a cameo at the circus when you're playing Ransom the Insult Clown, and you see them in the audience. You see the tentacle, you see Dr. Ed and Edna, and you can even call Edna, apparently, on the phone. But there's also an Edmund it's Chuck Edmund that owns the mansion, but that was kind of their thing with Maniac Mansion. They had those characters with the E-E-D in the name, like Edna, Ned, Fred, and you know.
Are there any tentacles there then?
Just in the audience at the circus, there was tentacles.
That's what I meant. Okay, so there had to be a tentacle there.
They made reference to the things that, like, the big purple meteor, that crash lands in the newspaper article. So they do make reference to the other games. So, yeah.
Okay. As for me, since I'm on the road, I've just been playing some iOS games. And the one I've been playing the most is the board game, the video game adaptation of the board game, Castles of Mad King Ludwig. For those of you who don't know, it's a game in which you plop down rooms and you have to make sure they synergize with other rooms, you know. And the reason why it's Mad King Ludwig is sometimes they don't make any sense, even though you're scoring points for it. Well, they make a sense, but weird sense.
What's the point? What are you trying to do?
I just get a high score and build a castle.
Okay. For a second I was thinking of something like Evil Genius, where you're putting down rooms to, like, kill spies.
No. This is you're just the mad architect and you're building a castle with the rooms that are available. I also just got in the mail a board game called New Bedford, and it does come with single player mode, which is nice. It's where you're in New Bedford, New England town, and you're trying to make money whaling. And that's the entire game. And it's pretty fun. It was at PAX East, and I saw it, and I said, yeah, I want to get that game. So the base game came today. The expansion's coming tomorrow. And for those, it's hard to find, because I think there's only a few copies left on Amazon, too. So if you see a copy on Amazon, snatch it up. Especially since it's only $28 for the base game, and it comes with a lot of nice little components, a lot of wood components, and even a pseudo burlap bag, you know, dice bag, which is really nice.
Ooh, that sounds awesome! I like dice bags.
Yeah, it's a pseudo burlap. You know, it has that texture, and it's gray. You know, it's really high quality. It's so high quality, trying to make itself seem like low quality. You know, but yeah, and since it comes with a single-player mode, what's called, it's pretty nice. Like I said, it's only $28 on Amazon, and the expansion is only $18. So, anyways, we're going to move on to the news here, and let me pull this up. Okay, so our first news item: Overwatch Pro ends career with stream of racial slurs, and this comes to us from Destructoid. Overwatch Pro Matt Deller Vaughn has been dropped by Toronto Esports after the release of a video wherein Vaughn, angry at an online opponent, proceeds to scream at the top of his lungs, mind your computer level if you watch this video, and then repeats the N-word for about 30 seconds straight, adding some additional adjectives toward the end. Vaughn was streaming on Twitch at the time, and one of his viewers captured the video of 28-year-old gamer of the 28-year-old gamer's Michael Richards moment. For those of you who don't know who Michael Richards was, he was Kramer on Seinfeld.
Oh,
and
God.
He had this outburst, which was unbelievable, like a decade ago, and he hasn't been seen since. From what I understand, Michael Richards was not a very pleasant person to begin with, just, you know. So anyway, his Twitch channel has since been closed for violating terms of service. According to Toronto Esports President Ryan Pallett, Toronto Esports is an organization built on inclusivity, and we have always had a zero-tolerance policy for any forms of discrimination. Immediately upon learning of the incident, the player was interviewed, admitted to the offense, and was notified that his contract with the organization was being terminated. Vaughn announced on Twitter that he is done with esports and won't be returning. He also wrote a longer message. I fucked up and deserve to be dropped from Toronto Esports Starts. Good start. I won't try to argue or make an excuse. I don't have any. Before he starts making excuses. First he says he had a bad day. He's not getting enough sleep. Twitch was not working. His internet was lagging. His opponent was quote-unquote badly cheating. And both teams were shit-talking him. Vaughn maintained that despite him using that word, he is not a racist. And then he started going ballistic and using that word about a bunch of times later. So, yeah, it's just completely bizarre, you know?
You can lose your temper and cuss without actually saying racial slurs. It's just mind-boggling that they can spit out these racial slurs and say, oh, but I'm not racist, but this, and the other thing. It's like, why? That doesn't make any sense. How they can think
that. Bill Maher said my favorite statement ever. Bill Maher said, there are two things racists hate. One is being called a racist. Two is black people. but here's the thing. Now, for all of you saying, oh, it's just freedom of speech and it's PC and all that. Here's the thing about that. Okay, one, obviously, this is not covered by free speech because he's not getting arrested. He just broke the terms of his contract. But two, racial slurs and homophobic slurs and all sorts of these kind of slurs usually end up in violence. And here's the thing. If you don't think that that's true, you're a middle-class white guy or an upper-class white guy. You've never had to deal with it because it's always the prelude to something nasty happening right down the line. It happens all the time. As a matter of fact, it's a part of military training, not calling you racial slurs, but they break you down so that you can become, you know, an emotionless killer, right? Because you have to be able to view people as non-objects. And that's what this does when you use racial slurs or homophobic slurs. You know, if you call someone faggot, 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 you know, pretty soon you stop seeing them as a person and just a category, and then it makes it all right for you to beat the shit out of them. Trust me, if you're not a minority, that's how it works. That's why, you know. And also, you know, it's downright rude to begin with, you know. And I say, if you're going to make a racial slur, at least do it in front of someone's face so that they can beat the shit out of you.
I mean,
you know?
This would not be this big of an issue if he had just said asshole instead of the N-word. I mean, that's like how big of an impact it is.
Here's the thing. I think it would have still been canned. Let's ignore the racial slurs for a moment. I think that kind of behavior would have at the very least gotten suspended for a long time.
Yeah,
it
definitely.
Is not. It's not sportsmanlike.
It's not.
This is not the Wild West. They're trying to make money, and you know the entire thing with PewDiePie. You know, here's a little thing about that. YouTube did not do anything. It was Disney who said, "Wait, we don't want this kind of person on our channel." That's what screwed up his deal with Disney. It wasn't YouTube, you know, because Disney has an image, you know. They're not going to allow someone like that, you know, who thinks, aren't Nazis funny? Without any hint of irony. He's not Mel Brooks, folks. You know, he's not doing Springtime for Hitler. He's just saying Nazism is just another thing and it's great. You know, it's sort of like Marge Schott saying, well, Hitler had some good ideas in the beginning. Hey, here's the thing. TJ, you play esports. You play League of Legends. You don't play Dota, but you play League of Legends, right?
Oh, I play a lot of things. I play Rainbow Six Siege. I play League of Legends. I've played Overwatch.
Okay, let's talk about esports. Let's talk about esports right now. So
right.
You probably are familiar with them. And, you know, that there is a difference between being an esports person and just some schmo playing a game.
Sure thing. And the big thing is that they're trying to get away from the idea that these are just the same old playing, because the same old is toxic. There are people out there that scream this stuff. That's an everyday idiot that you look like when you're on a public channel screaming vulgarity into somebody's ear because you're mad about it. That you can find that anywhere. Just go play a game of Overwatch and turn on voice chat and you can hear that. Esports is trying to look like a legitimate. Sorry.
Yeah, I'm just saying a lot of it. I'm sorry. Let me just make this quick point before you make it. A lot of it, by the way, are just really children who don't exactly understand the impact of what they're saying. You know, they don't understand the weight of what they're saying because they don't have the life experience. Then we have 28-year-olds like this. So okay, continue, TJ.
Well, yeah, and like you said, this is a business. There are people out there that are investing thousands of dollars into this to make it a thing, and it's not for nothing that they give these people an opportunity to do it. But at the same time, they're trying to look professional. More than anything right now, esports is trying to find footing as a professional, legitimate arena of business. Yeah. And they've come a long way, but things like this dude who, let's face it, people are going to watch him, kids are probably going to watch him, and they're going to be looking up to this guy up until the moment where he shows that it's okay to do this, even for a second, and then somebody has to step in and say, no, it's not.
I'm glad they took it away, because we don't need examples like this being a role model, you know, just like that how bow girl, whatever, you know, it amazes me how we do seem to glamorize people like this that just spew out negativity and vulgarity, and it's not cool. And you know, so I'm glad.
I hate to talk about stereotype here, by the way, but a lot of these esports players don't have social skills.
Yeah, I don't think all this person time, does.
All their time, I don't think they're talking to actual people, you know, and a lot of the times they live in homogenous areas, you know, and they just don't have the life experiences that even a 10-year-old has. You know? I mean, these people are not, a lot of these people, I'm not saying all of them are, I'm saying a good portion of them are, though. You know? And here's the thing, you know what esports wants? They want the Coca-Cola endorsement. They want to get some huge company to pay for it, you know, say the official esports of Coca-Cola, you know, that sort of thing. It's like the Olympics. You know, people are fighting for the Olympic sponsorships. Esports wants to get to that level.
Right. And like guys like this aren't helping. They're not helping legitimize anything. If anything, they're detracting from the entire purpose.
I agree. They make gamers look bad. They make people online look bad. They make everyone look bad.
They make the games community look bad.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, you know, I can't help but grab a bag of popcorn and just watch.
Just watch the fire.
They're just, you know, whenever someone becomes a train wreck, you just can't help but watch, you know. Just a little bit of rubbernecking at this fool. But the thing is that, you know, here's the other thing. Have either of you have heard of this guy?
Nope.
No, I hadn't.
See, that's the problem. That's another thing, is that a lot of these guys are anonymous people. I mean, you know, they don't have that level yet. So once they start getting the real attention, you know. The other thing about esports, and I'm going to get back to PewDiePie. PewDiePie thinks he's a big deal because he has millions and millions of viewers or whatever, subscribers. Yeah, a lot of them are under the age of 12. Here's the thing. Look how fast Lucas Cruikshank found out how much his hits were worth. He had three movies, all Nickelodeon, and goodbye. Smosh, goodbye. It's a very small pond to be a big fish in. And right now, esports is a small pond. And that's how, you know, that's how the major backers view it right now, you know? I mean, there was an outcry by some of the sportscasters on ESPN when ESPN dared show an esports event.
Yeah.
I was like, why is this on here? You know, and the answer should be, well, it's popular, you know, and it might bring in revenue. But yeah, this guy isn't going to help.
I mean, we already had the World Series of Poker on ESPN. Are we really going to judge the quality of sports that can be shown there?
Yeah, but here's the thing. People know what poker is, you know, and they can follow along. It's very hard to follow along League of Legends or Dota, you know.
That's true.
I mean, I know there are announcers who are really good at explaining what's going on, but even I sometimes will be confused about the significance of something. And just imagine Joe Layman, who doesn't do any video games, what are creeps? You know, they're going to have those kind of questions. I mean, it's a little bit easier with fighting games because, hey, look, two characters are fighting. That's easy to understand. You know, with MOBAs, it's going to be a little bit harder. I think actually, you know what? Ubisoft has been grooming, your game, Red Siege, to be an esport. You know.
Oh, you mean For Honor?
No. I'm talking about Rainbow Six Siege. It's being groomed to be an esport. And I think, you know, I think it'll actually make a very good eSport once it gets popular.
Yeah, because that is like that game was built from the ground up that way. It's built to be like a action-packed game of chess.
Yeah. Well, thank goodness Counter-Strike isn't considered a serious eSport because, you know, a lot of the problem children are in that game. Mm-hmm. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Take it away, Scott.
All right. Let's go bring up the window. Okay. Was it a watch? Oh, no. This is Kingdom Hearts from GameSpot. Don't expect Kingdom Hearts 3 Final Fantasy VII Remake until at least 2018. Oh, that's from... Okay, that's what was confusing. That's the title, and that's from GameSpot. Square Enix has still yet to provide a release date for Kingdom Hearts 3 or Final Fantasy VII Remake. But if you were holding out hope that either one would launch this year, things aren't looking good. A recent investors document the company shared via NeoGAF highlights many of the company's recent major releases, as well as those expected in the fiscal year 2018, which began at the start of April and beyond. Whereas several of these future games, including Dragon's Quest XI, have at least a vague 2017 dates listed, Kingdom Hearts 3, Final Fantasy VII Remake, and upcoming Marvel games have nothing at all. While this is not a formal announcement that none of these will release this year, it seems incredibly unlikely that we'll see any of them before 2018 at the earliest. That comes a little surprise. The Marvel partnership was confirmed not long ago, while comments from Kingdom Hearts 3 and Final Fantasy VII Remake director Tetsuya Nomura earlier this year reinforced that neither of these projects was on the verge of release. While I can't make a sweeping statement because of the development process is different from what we've done so far, there are still worlds untouched, he said of the Kingdom Hearts 3 at the time. Production is progressing on unannounced worlds in a state that we cannot show them off. In terms of the state of development, there is still some way to go. Despite that, he did express interest in at least sharing something from the two games at some point in 2017. Last year, I didn't put out much information on either title, but this year I want to show our progress at an event somewhere. The release of the titles themselves have still a way to go, but there are many titles releasing this year if you can wait for any surprises.
Okay. So I think Scott only saw the release date for Dragon Quest XI, and that's all he cares about right now.
Yeah, that's all I care about. Yes, I agree.
Maybe Paul would have... I know Paul, if he were here, would have a resigned, oh, well, about Kingdom Hearts 3, you know, sort of like he's just... He'd take it as very bad news, but he'd say, that, well, there's nothing new about that.
It's becoming a bit like a Halo or Half-Life 3 joke there. You know, Half-Life 3 confirmed.
Well, at least Kingdom Hearts 3 was announced.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, they never really announced Half-Life 3. They just had a cliffhanger to Episode 2, and that's it.
Yep. Series of leaks that led to nowhere.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't...
So, go ahead.
I don't know exactly the breadth that they're putting into Kingdom Hearts 3, but I did read up a bit about the Final Fantasy VII Remake and trying to understand what they mean about how they're going to be dividing this game up. And it sounds like what they were doing is doing the game from different perspectives. So I think there's a lot of depth, you know, a lot of work that's going to go into that. So it'll be interesting to see what they have to show as a final product.
Yeah. And I'm willing to watch them take their time on this because, mm-hmm. I mean, I was impressed with Final Fantasy XV. They really kind of turned the series around from where it was with that one. And I'm at least curious to I would kind of hope that they apply the Final Fantasy XV model to what they're doing with Final Fantasy VII Remake.
I think they are.
If that's the case, please take your time, because if you fuck up Final Fantasy VII, you're going to have the world mad at you.
Yeah, definitely. I also
noticed they have Final Fantasy XII being released on July 13th. No, you didn't mention that. I don't know much about Final Fantasy. I know that a lot of people didn't like it, or at least said it was a lesser entry into the series.
12 is not the worst, but it's not the best.
12 was
All I know is I played Final Fantasy 13, and that was not a good introduction to the universe for me.
I think 12 is the one that's all steampunk. I think
it's the one where they're like pirates and stuff.
Yeah, I think I liked that one. It was easy to get overpowered though, because you could just grind out the skill points and then fill out that little chessboard thing, and everybody could get every skill. I like having
style
skills for characters, and like it just makes them more unique to me.
Yeah, hold on. Here's a technical error, folks.
Oh. Ah.
Hello?
Yeah, here.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Yeah, my mic just went bluey. So, yeah, so for that, I just found it, damn it. I want to just keep talking.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, Kingdom Hearts 3, it is what it is. I think we've been hearing for a pretty darn long time that Kingdom Hearts 3 would eventually be on its way. And in the meantime, we've gotten Kingdom Hearts 1, Kingdom Hearts 2, Kingdom Hearts 2.3, Kingdom Hearts Dream Drop Distance, Kingdom Hearts blah, 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 fraction of the cost. And I am almost to the point where I don't care. When you do it, you'll do it. And until then, I'm going to take you with a grain of salt.
Mm-hmm. Just make sure you can hear me now, right?
Yes, we can.
Yes.
Okay, good. Yeah, for whatever reason, my headset decided to unpair itself from the Bluetooth. I have no idea why that happened. So my thing about Final Fantasy VII was that I wonder if they're going to do it with the style of Final Fantasy XIII and XV. You know, instead of having the cartoony JRPG 16-bit characters, maybe having them full-blown as full characters, you know, what they have now.
They haven't had 16-bit characters for a very long time.
Well, you know what I mean, though. I mean, Final Fantasy XVII, weren't they like, isometric RPG sort of thing?
Wait, which one?
I mean...
Seven?
Seven...
Oh.
Seven was isometric, but it wasn't 16-bit...
You know what I mean, though. You know, they were
blocky models.
Yeah,
they were blocky as hell, though. They were also not... They weren't proportionate humans, right? No, they were just these squat little...
This was the beginning of the 3D era, as far as that was concerned.
Yeah,
What I mean is just making it full 3D like you had with Final Fantasy 13 or 15, you know, yeah. In which you have characters in an environment like that, you know.
I think they showed a battle where you could see that it was full 3D and... Cloud and Barrett were fighting, and they showed you the combat style. So I'm pretty sure it is
combat,
all fully rendered.
Combat and JRPGs are often a separate thing from the actual, you know, on overland gameplay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking of the Tales of the series there. I'm talking about, you know, something like Final Fantasy XV, you know, in which it's seamless.
I think that is what they're going for.
Yeah.
And they have
they've
played with that with the Final Fantasy VII universe before. They had Dirge of Cerberus, which was just a straight up shooter based around the character Vincent Valentine. But they also had a sort of action RPG set up where they did a full RPG based around Zack. And that was Final Fantasy VII Advent Core. And that was just on the PSP. But it was sort of like a full-on action RPG with like fully rendered environments and all that.
I just want to know if it's going to be on the Xbox One so I can get some sweet achievements. Well, that's all I care about. Anyway, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, TJ.
Alrighty. Dota 2 will soon require competitors to cough up their phone number. From Shaq News. Smurfing has become a thing in competitive Dota 2. So much of a thing that Valve is making it personal. It wants your phone number starting next month. The technique of smurfing is when higher-ranking players create new accounts to appear as inexperienced players so they can get paired in competitive matches against newbies. To combat this, Dota 2 developer Valve wants to create wants a phone number tied to each player's account. If you create a new account, you'll need a separate phone number. Quote, players using multiple accounts create a negative matchmaking experience at all skill brackets. So our goal is to add just enough friction to this process that the number of players doing this will be noticeably reduced, Valve said on the official Dota 2 blog. Having more players using their primary accounts will have a positive effect on both ranked and unranked matchmaking. If players don't register a valid phone number for their accounts, by May 4th, the accounts will be ineligible for ranked play. If you change numbers, that is fine. But the old number cannot mysteriously show up on a new account. That old number becomes inactive for 3 months, basically keeping players from using it on multiple accounts. Also, online phone services that give out free numbers are not allowed.
Okay, so we'll stop there because the rest is just editorializing from Shaq News. So yeah, this reminds me of when Yahtzee noticed that people were only having one man races with him so that they could just boost their ratings. I don't know why people would do this, though. You know, it's like, do you really have that tiny a penis that you need to play against new players by pretending to be one?
Let me explain thoroughly. Yes. And there is more to it than that. But here's why. A, those people do that because when you reach a high enough level, you can't. It takes a long time to get into new matches. Speaking of someone who plays League of Legends all the time, I know full well that people that are in Gold 1, which is just below Diamond, once you get up that high, you could be waiting for somewhere around 30 minutes for players of your skill level to join up in a ranked game. Go ahead.
Isn't this something that like card sharks or pool sharks would do? They pretend to be not good, and then they kind of surprise you at the end, and that's how they beat you or something.
That is the other thing.
Something like
that. That is the other thing. The other reason why people do Smurf accounts is so they can go on and troll on that account without getting caught and not worry about their main account being banned. There have been no lack of people that have trolled on Smurf accounts that have gotten that account banned, and they're like, well, whatever, this is a Smurf account anyways. What do I care if it gets banned? It's not even my main account. And I've had people tell me that directly after League of Legends matches, so I can only take them at face value, but if it's there, it's there.
If you want to get a second T-Mobile, a number, or something like that, good luck. It'll still cost you.
I am... Speaking as a League of Legends player, I am very curious to see how that turns out for Dota 2, because I hope that they're able to eventually... I hope it works out well enough that they're able to implement something like it, and I hope Riot Games is watching.
Yeah, but you know, you said that it takes a long time for them to matchmake. Don't you think they need better matchmaking algorithms then?
It's not so much the algorithm that's the matter, it's the fact that there's not as many people at that high of a level.
Well, then, you know what? Here's the thing. Then have people who are just below that level. Yeah, they're not noobs. You wouldn't want noobs in there. But, hey, look, if you have a few silver players playing with the gold, at least they'll learn something. I mean, they've gotten that high enough to know to be gunning to be gold, right? So they can watch gold players play while they're playing with them. And same thing with platinum. I mean, here's the thing. suppose you're a gold member, right? And suddenly you were put in a platinum matchmaking because they didn't have enough people to play. So wouldn't you be happy that you're playing with the platinum players?
Yeah, but the platinum players would bitch and moan. I can tell you that.
Well, here's the thing. Either that or not play. You know, they might bitch and moan, but at least it's like it's better than having bots filling out your team.
Yeah.
And like I said, you know, if they think about, wait a minute, you know, we could use this as talent evaluation.
I don't know what the answer to the algorithm is, and I don't know how they would fix that. I do know that smurfing needs to be cut down, and because it doesn't help anybody. It's an asshole's move to...
I mean, one of the strengths of League of Legends and Dota are they're so friendly towards new players as it is.
Yeah. Yeah. That
it's
is
like rough, you know, and you just keep... The troll game of all trolls, Rust, you know, not a lot of people are going to want to play that because everybody's an asshole. And if you're not part of a group, you might as well just, you know, not even bother playing because you'll be shot dead and trolled all the time.
I already tell people about League of Legends. When they ask me what I've been playing, I say, yeah, I play League of Legends. I wouldn't recommend it to anyone.
That's something because... that Riot Games really wants you to tell people. Yeah, I enjoy playing it, but don't join it.
That's just sad that, you know, you have this hostile environment to be playing a game in. I don't understand how it thrives, but I guess there it is.
Yeah, I mean
they have a large base and a large dedicated base. There's that, and I think Riot Games and Valve both know. Not that Valve is starving for money, by the way, you know, so they can afford to have a low player base. Riot Games just really, you know, caters to the people it already has and tries not to lose them.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the fact of the matter is, like, I might be masochistic in that way, that I put in the time and I pushed through some... I can say that I have had some pretty miserable sessions playing League of Legends, and it made me just sit there in my chair afterwards like, why am I doing this? What am I doing with my life?
Don't you think this sort of relates to the first story a little bit?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, it definitely does. And it's, you know, it's a shame that, like, people like that. There just seems to be toxic people that need to take a look at themselves in the mirror and say, what are they, why are they being this way? Because I've played online with other people in multiplayer communities that weren't like this, so it really kind of shocks me that they're this nasty. It's just,
it just reminds me of Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare 2, you know? Here's the thing about that. The community is great, even though a lot of them are little kids that I have to mute. You know, and when I say little kids, I don't mean they're foul-mouthed or anything like that. They're just little kids, and it makes me feel less like an adult because I feel like I'm in the kiddie pool, you know? But, you know, there's a lot of college-age players on there and all that, and you know what? Everybody... Maybe it's the mood of the game. You know, it's a very quirky game, you know, and, you know, very cartoonish, even though some of it is horrifying. If you ever see the gigantic sunflowers, you'll scream in terror. They're like these big smiling monsters that just blast you to bits. So anyways, but a lot of it is, you know, it generates sort of a positive atmosphere, and I've never really had a problem with asshole players playing Garden Warfare 2. And here's the dirty little secret. Well, not dirty. Here's a secret about Garden Warfare 2. It's a great third-person shooter. It's better. It's Battlefield with Plants vs. Zombies, and it outclasses Battlefield. You know? Telltale knows its stuff when it comes to play balance and fun. You know? Mm-hmm. I'm telling you right now, if you're not playing Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare 2... try it, and you'll find it to be addicting. And I think that's one of the reasons why it's a free game on EA Access, because they want people to play that thing.
Mm-hmm.
If they announce a Garden Warfare 3, I will be all in. But here's the thing. When you first played Garden Warfare 2, you know, they ended the thing like in February, they actually gave you a bonus character, a bonus based on the level that you were in Garden Warfare 1. And I'm going to tell you something. Those people who have the unicorn chompers, they're treated like gods. Because you had to get to level 256, I believe, to get that thing. I only made it as far as 81.
Hmm.
But yeah, there are hardcore Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare players. Anyways, yeah, I just, you know, it's nice to see. It's a good idea, because if you want to make multiple accounts on that game, you know, you better be prepared to spend a lot of money.
Yeah, and I hope it works out. I hope it becomes a more widespread thing. I hope Riot and Blizzard, and I hope everyone's watching how this works out, because it's worth watching. It's worth attack a situation that happens in a lot of different markets of esports games.
Actually, I think it's not so much money, but effort. Because, you know, I can make a new number by getting a new pay-as-you-go cell phone. But that's a pain in the butt to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, we're going to move on to the last news item. Okay. Yeah, boy, let me get this up. Report. PlayStation VR bundle will come with camera and one move controller. From GamesRadar. If you were a bit dismayed when it revealed that the PlayStation VR would not come with the required PlayStation camera peripheral, you may just know more. Tech Insider reports that there will be a bundle that comes with a basic PlayStation VR package, as well as a PlayStation camera and one PlayStation Move controller. A company rep made the statement during an interview with president of Sony's worldwide studios, Shohei Yoshida, as why this bundle isn't the de facto way to buy a PlayStation VR. Yoshida said that, quote-unquote, plenty of people already own a PS camera. What exactly that means is unknown, as Yoshida did not divulge sales numbers or percentages. Another point not specified by Yoshida or the Sony rep, the price of the special bundle. Purchased separately, these items would add up to roughly $500. $400 for the PlayStation VR, $60 for the PlayStation camera, and $30 for the PlayStation Move controller. But usually these sorts of all-in-one packages present some sort of savings to make them more appealing. Either way, it sounds like there will be a VR option for you, regardless of what you already own. And my question is, why in the world do you still need a camera and a PlayStation Move to have a VR... to have a VR headset? I still don't get it. It still seems like to me like Sony's trying to move this junk that didn't sell.
So you need the camera because the camera is what tracks the lights on the VR headset and tracks your movements. It's basically for, you know how for Oculus Rift and the Vive you have to set up these little towers in the room that sort of track that sort of make a play area that track where you are and what you're doing. For PSVR, that camera is sort of the setting up of those poles. It
move controller.
It tracks the
move
lights.
Move controller. No, answer that. How many people still even want the move controller?
You don't need the move controller for almost 90% of the games. I played Psychonauts without the Move controller. I just used a regular PS4 controller.
I know, but still, you need. It's just a light-up dildo. That's all it's good for, really.
Oh, I know. I mean, there are a handful of games that require the Move controller, but the mass majority of PlayStation VR games, you can play with on just a regular PS4 pad.
Yeah, and I don't think many people. When he wouldn't reveal how many cameras were sold, that answers your question right there. It's not like,
yeah.
You know, I mean, people were probably thinking, I don't want to connect. That's basically what they were thinking, you know.
So much so that they eventually had to make an Xbox One that didn't have it just built in.
Yeah, and what's really annoying is, yeah, you can do that, but why'd you remove the port? Because now you got to get an adapter to if you already own a Kinect, to hook up to the Xbox One S. And I'm pretty sure you're going to have an adapter to hook it up to the Project Scorpio 2. And here's my thing is I like my Kinect. You know, it does some nice things for me. I don't want to have to give it up.
Yeah.
But I have to get now an adapter to use it for the Xbox One S and the future PlayStation. Not the PlayStation. I mean the Project Scorpio. So the thing is that... That's still $500. I mean, okay, let's say it's $450, because if you're gonna sell this bundle, you might as well make it a little cheaper.
There had better be a game with it, I would think. And I can't really think of any game for the PSVR just yet that would be like the killer app.
Crappy game like the Batman game.
Well, I think the closest thing that they have to a killer app on the PSVR is Resident Evil 7.
And what about Eve Valkyrie? Or is that on PS4?
It is, but I don't think it's as good as Resident Evil 7.
Okay. No, well, you're not going to include a killer app because you want them to buy something. I mean, maybe a year from now, you know, for the second wave, you say, oh, we're going to include Resident Evil 7 VR.
Yeah.
I would say include the Batman game because it's like a short tech demo.
Yeah, I would say, yeah, that's cool. I mean, you could do that or Drive Club. Drive Club was pretty fun on there.
Yeah. Are there any games that actually just require a download to make them VR, or they have to be sold separately?
I have not seen a regular game that had VR features that applied to the PSVR, except for Resident Evil 7. But in that particular case, you did not have to download a separate entity for the game. It was already packed into the Resident Evil 7 disc.
Also, the other thing about that is that Resident Evil 7 is not a Sony game.
Yeah, but it literally had a feature just in the game where you could flip the VR on or off like a switch at any time you wanted.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I'm hearing rumor-mongering about is that Microsoft and Bethesda are going to announce something special about Fallout 4 VR for Project Scorpio. You know,
mm-hmm.
I know that it's coming out for the PlayStation Pro, but I think that... Because here's the thing, you know, Microsoft and Bethesda have been hand-in-hand for a while now. They've been... You know, they were what Microsoft and EA were for a while. So it'll be interesting to see what's going to happen with Fallout 4 VR.
Yeah.
That's a question. Are you excited for Fallout 4 VR?
Not particularly at this time, only because I wasn't excited for Fallout. I mean, after playing Fallout 4, I'm not that excited about Fallout 4.
But here's the thing. Well, how about this? What if they make a Skyrim VR? Actually, no, that could be the announcement. Can you imagine exclusive to Project Scorpio, Skyrim VR?
You know what I would rather have? I would rather have them announce the new Elder Scrolls game and then afterwards say, also, this game can be played in VR.
Oh, that's probably a given. I mean, at this point?
Maybe.
I think that's going to be the running theme of this upcoming E3, actually. At each conference, blah, 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 this new game. Oh, and by the way, it can be played in VR.
I think something that if I was to need to use this move with the VR, I would clearly need some sort of sword fighting or lightsaber game that I would need to have that. That would have to be an absolute given right there.
The game that I've seen, the games that I think of when I think of PSVR games that require the Move controllers, there's one where you're climbing rocks, and so you obviously need to have your hands moving in different directions.
But I know that game, you don't need it because the PC version and the Xbox version don't require it.
Right, but that's what I think of when I think of a game that would, like, be better with Move controllers, maybe. And the other one was, like, I think it was called Robinson or something like that, and you used the one end of the Move controller, you were holding the front of the gun, and the other end of the Move controller, you were holding the back of the gun.
Ooh, how about Zombie U as a VR game?
That would be tight.
Yeah. Of course, just Zombie on on the other versions, because it was no longer Zombie U when it came off the Wii U.
Or Zombie R.
Ah, see, there you go. There you go. Anyways, yeah, I mean, I'm still not 100% on VR. I mean, I can take it or leave it. But, you know, oh, by the way, unfortunately, Rick and Morty will not be on PlayStation VR. It's just PC VR.
Lame.
If it's successful enough. It's, you know, it always struck me as sort of like an extended tech demo, sort of like a puzzle game, which kept on expanding and expanding and expanding as you went along. Oh, you know what would be a great VR game? The Witness.
That would be a good
witnesses
one.
It? Yeah. I mean, puzzle games would really be nice as a VR game, you know, especially if you can break the third wall. Although, now that I think about it, you know, the 3DS puzzle games that used 3D weren't that great, so we'll see.
Weren't they already gearing up for Firewatch VR?
I don't know. I haven't played Firewatch.
I know you could play...
I already know that if I play Firewatch, I'm going to turn off the map. Everybody says, turn off the map or else it's boring.
I know you could play Minecraft with the Oculus. I think that counts as VR.
Yeah, I think they're really pitching HoloLens for it, so you actually have augmented reality with Minecraft, which actually makes more sense for it, because if you're going to play with Legos, you might as well have the Legos on the table in front of you.
Yes.
Yeah. So anyways, that should be the question of the week right there. What kind of VR game would you like to see? And we'll have TJ answer that first. Go ahead, TJ. What kind of VR game do you want?
I've sold myself on the matter. I want the new Elder Scrolls to have a VR option. Okay. I mean, after playing Resident Evil 7, I've seen how it works, and I'm ready for that to happen in a new Elder Scrolls game.
I want a sword fighting or dragon riding VR game.
Ooh.
So speaking of Elder Scrolls, if you give me...
You also have Panzer Dragoon, too. I mean, you could have a Panzer Dragoon VR.
There you go.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that. Like, you pretty much are the rider on the dragon, and you shoot at and you point in directions and shoot at things.
Yeah, that'd be sweet.
Okay, I'll give one for you. The original Star Wars arcade game, which was a rail shooter. Remember that one? It was all wireframe. But can you imagine doing it with full 3D graphics and being a gunner in a TIE fighter? Not a TIE fighter, but an X-Wing,
mm-hmm.
where you're not piloting, you're just shooting, and you're flying through space, and you have to do the trench run all in VR?
That'd be cool.
Oh, man. I think VR vector graphics would make me vom.
Oh, yeah, well, you could also do VR and vector graphics, too. I mean, you're flying through Tron. Anyways, I'm not going to do the boilerplate. You know, we already know. This is on iTunes. Look for our show notes on gamingpodcast.net. And you can also find me at Jonah Falcon on Twitter.
You can find me, TJ Denzer, at Johnny Chugs.
And you can find me, Scott Dirk, at Alpha Shard.
And, you know, next episode we're going to do is going to be $2.99. And it'll be a lot higher quality because I'm probably going to record it in New York rather than in L.A. Like I said, episode 300 is coming up. And then, you know, after that, sometime in June, it seems like TJ's E3 plans are starting to shape up. So we may actually do a podcast from E3.
Fingers crossed.
I'm going to have to find out a way to do this thing live just to see if we can do it that way. I know there's a way to do Skype live. I haven't really figured it out yet.
Worst case scenario, I'll be bringing my laptop so we can set it up and probably set up some audio gear.
Hey, Scott, you know, I think doesn't the Turncast do live episodes too?
They do. Their podcast episodes is live on YouTube every other Sunday or Saturday. They'll record.
Oh, okay. So it's I mean, maybe me and TJ can do a live YouTube podcast. Mm-hmm. You know, and you can see the lights going off behind us at E3.
That'd be awesome.
Nice.
Yeah, and then we'll just because I have a media converter, I can just turn an MP4 into an MP3 and just upload that.
That'll work.
Alrighty.
Yeah. Let's we'll have all of three viewers, and all of them will be our mothers. What is that about the Elder Scrolls? I've heard of the Elder Scrolls. Don't you have dragons in that? Yes, Mom, there's a dragon shout. Anyways, we will see you maybe not next week, but in the next episode.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Take care, y'all.